Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, it's not every day we get to talk about the films of John Hughes on the program. The legendary Chicago filmmaker spoke for a generation in the 80s with films like 16 Candles, Pretty in Pink, Ferris Bueller, and The Breakfast Club, and later with Home Alone, Uncle Buck, and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. And if you're from Chicago, you understand Hughes on a whole other level, as most of his films were shot right here on the North Shore. But for writer Jason Diamond, those films not only entertained, but served as inspiration for a childhood that was defined by a broken home, abuse, and loneliness. Diamond's memoir is called Searching for John Hughes, or Everything I Thought I Needed to Know About Life I Learned from Watching 80s Movies. Jason not only tried to model his childhood around Hughes movies, but he spent a good part of his adult life writing about the reclusive filmmaker, working on a shelved, unauthorized biography. Diamond grew up in Skokie. He now lives in Brooklyn, working as a sports editor for RollingStone.com, and he's my guest tonight on The Download. Jason, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is great.
This is, I mean, it's such a great book because it's not about John Hughes. It's about you. It's a memoir. Mm-hmm. Talk about this journey for you, because John Hughes has played such an important part of your life.
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing his movies when I was a little kid, and the first thing that struck me was, that's my backyard. You know, I know exactly where that church is. I know where that is. I know where this is. And, you know, when you grow up watching movies, everything is New York or Los Angeles. And if you grow up in Chicago and you get to see your hometown, that actually fills you with a sort of pride that you never had before with other films.
And for you personally, I mean, it goes beyond. I mean, for all of us being able to, there's something great about a John Hughes movie, especially when it pops on and it's, you know, you're watching Ferris Bueller, you're like, oh, yeah. As a Chicagoan, you love it. But for you, I mean, it almost was something that you wanted to live up to, the suburbia that John Hughes was portraying in these films.
Yeah, it was escapism in a lot of ways for me. I mean, you know, my parents separated when I was really young, and it was pretty bad early on and stayed pretty bad all throughout. And, you know, when you watch a John Hughes film, there's strife, there's like parents forgetting birthdays, and there's like little things like that. And, you know, obviously you have like Bender in The Breakfast Club and Cameron and Ferris Bueller, but you don't see that stuff. And,
right.
You know, it all looks pretty nice. It's got this kind of like Rockwellian sort of tone to it.
Well, there's the idea that that Chicagoland, because of John Hughes, Chicagoland became the home of the American teenager. You know, that John Hughes spoke for teenagers. He wasn't necessarily creating films that were, this is the stereotypical teenager. He was diverse in how he approached it.
Yeah, he took a different approach to it. But I mean, I also think that like you have films like Risky Business that came out a few years earlier, and the adaptation of Ordinary People, which won the Oscar. And I think those films did a good job of kind of showing that there's a seedier side to the suburbs, which I kind of like too. And then Hughes kind of was like, you know, he's going to use the same exact place, but he's going to, it's just going to be normal town USA. And I kind of appreciate that. And I like both sides of it, but I like the Hughes one a little bit more.
Growing up in Skokie, you're right. I mean, you're hop, skip, and a jump from the places that are in John Hughes films, Shermer, Illinois, if you will.
Yep.
Talk about discovering those places and what those places, the actual geography meant to you growing up.
Well, I mean, I moved around a lot because my parents got divorced. And with divorced parents, you have parents trying to figure out where they're living in another year, then the next year, and then the next. So I went to a lot of different schools. I also grew up playing hockey. So I was in Winnetka, Lake Forest, Barrington. I was everywhere. And, you know, I remember hearing like, oh, we're going to pass the Home Alone house on the way when I was like maybe like 11. And I was like, that's cool. I'm excited. That's genuinely like a landmark. When you're 11 years old, and you don't have a lot of landmarks in your neck of the woods. Home Alone house. It's just like, what?
Right.
It was incredible. I remember that feeling.
You have this love affair that borderlines a little bit on obsessive compulsive behavior.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get to that. But mm-hmm. But the concept of a movie like 16 Candles or Pretty in Pink, I mean, they speak to a generation of teenagers, people who watched it when they were 18 mm-hmm. or 17. You watched them when you were much younger.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about what drew you to a John Hughes film when you were 7 years old, 8 years old, 9 years old.
When I was a kid, when I was that age, it was one thing. There were two different phases. So when I was a little kid, it was just they looked so cool. You know, I saw Molly Ringwald's character in Pretty in Pink. And, you know, when you're a kid, we're kind of taught like boys movies, girls like girls movies. And I never really got that. But I remember watching Pretty in Pink and thinking, God, Molly Ringwald, she's, you know, so cool. She like doesn't take garbage from anybody. I'm like, man, I want to be like that one day. And then as a teenager, you know, I was in my own little world. Like I liked comic books and I liked punk records. And I didn't like what other kids liked. I liked older stuff. And those teen movies being, you know, about a decade before I was a teen, the coming out before I was a teen really kind of spoke to me and felt like my own little thing.
I kind of talked at the beginning just about, and you focused a little bit on the divorce, but also just how you jump from place to place to place. And you had a broken childhood, mm-hmm. in the sense that you were in and out of doctor's offices with a clinical diagnosis of depression or obsessive compulsive or ADD or ADHD.
Yeah. There's a few of them. The Boy Scout badges,
but,
I call them.
I mean, what I really like about this, the memoir, is it really does talk about how all those experiences that you had at one point or another in the book, you almost reference them against John Hughes scenes from films or from other things. When you're going through that as a kid and you look back, how important was it to have all these different characters and John Hughes scripts to look on as almost like a place of optimism?
I mean, it was super important. I mean, you know, it's escapism. Watching a movie is escapism. But for me, it was also, especially with John Hughes films, I was like, that's literally, you know, I said this earlier, it's my backyard. And this is something that, you know, it's a normal life to me. It looks attainable. These people look happy and I want to be happy. That's how I felt as a little kid. I just wanted to be happy. I didn't want to hear my parents yelling. I didn't want to have to go to another doctor. You know, I wanted things to be normal, and that was as normal looking as it got. And it kind of filled me with some hope that one day maybe my life could be normal in some way.
Well, we're going to talk about your adult life coming up here. Jason Diamond is the author of Searching for John Hughes, or Everything I Thought I Needed to Know About Life I Learned from Watching 80s Movies. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll make a transition to your adult life. Really, searching for John Hughes, literally. Jason Diamond, my guest in studio. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, author Jason Diamond. His book, Searching for John Hughes, or Everything I Thought I Needed to Know About Life I Learned from Watching 80s Movies. It's a memoir. And I got to say, Jason, one of the great things about this book is your obsession with John Hughes didn't really start off as a memoir. I mean, you really wanted it to be a biography. That was your adult calling.
That's what I thought. I mean, I told somebody the other day, they're like, how did you come up with the idea? I was like, I was drunk. And I mean, I've been kicking around the idea, but you know, it was like a pride thing. Like somebody's like, so what exactly are you working on? You know, you're right. And I just was like, you know, I'm going to say John Hughes biography. And you know, I woke up the next day and I was like, that's a good idea. I'm going to do that. I'm 23, 24, whatever. What I got to lose? I'm going to write a biography. And you know,
but you had no experience on what that
zero.
Meant, how to do that, how to even start with that.
I had no clips to my name. I had nothing as a writer. And, you know, it kind of just felt like the DIY thing. Like, that's what you do. It's like, you want to write? Just go ahead and write. And, yeah, it was a silly, silly thing because a biography is, first of all, any book is a massive undertaking. But a biography is like, man, that's tough.
Well, I mean, you toiled away at this for years, and it's interesting in the book you talk about just, you know, getting one paragraph done and trying to work on this one paragraph, because a lot of what the biography was is trying to suss out relationships between the director and some of the actors, like a Matthew Broderick or a Molly Ringwald, and you didn't really have that information. You were sending out emails trying to get these people to talk to you, and nobody wanted to talk.
Yeah, I was pacing it together. I was honestly just going at it and just seeing what I could find. And meanwhile, I'm like working just like shift after shift at coffee shops in New York, which, you know, it's a great experience and it's money. But if you've ever worked in a coffee shop anywhere, especially in New York City, you know, you walk away at the end just feeling like the world just collapsed on you in one shift. Like, it got busy. You stink like espresso. Somebody probably called you a name. It just felt like things were just piling up on me. And meanwhile, all I've got is this idea that I'm writing a biography, and I'm telling people I'm writing this biography, and it was something to hold on to, which when you're that age, you know, when you're any age, but when you're young and you don't have much, you just look for anything to hold on to.
You know, and what I really enjoyed about it, the process of going through the biography and ultimately having that biography shelved, was that you did come back to Chicago, and as the book explores, Searching for John Hughes, I mean, there was, if not an aggressive You attempted through the way that you do things, getting in a car and driving around, going to different places that he might have shot at, where he may drink coffee, where he may go.
Yeah.
But you almost in a strange way friendly stalked John Hughes to almost put closure to this.
Yeah, I was hoping to just bump into him and be like, oh, hey, what are you doing here, John Hughes? I wasn't going to show up to his house. There was this documentary that came out a few years ago where this like Canadian film crew like literally showed up to his house and left a script.
Yeah, right.
Like, and I'm like, I can't do that kind of thing. I'm not that. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to bother somebody at their house. And, you know, it was just more like, maybe he'll, you know, I could just strike up a conversation about the Red Wings because I like hockey and he likes hockey and go from there.
And so many different people that you ran into going, oh, I know someone who knows somebody. Oh, you know, he was just in here. Like, I'll help you out. Like, and every time you got almost like a hot lead, if you will, you turned your back on it. It wasn't something that you aggressively wanted to pursue.
Yeah, it just, it's nothing felt right. And also, I don't know. There were just certain times where I would just be like, what am I doing? Like, should I really be doing this? Am I actually doing this? And it just kind of became like, you know, me wrestling with myself in a lot of ways. And, you know, I think we do a lot of silly things when we're in our 20s. And I'd like to think that this may have been the silliest. I'm sure there are a couple other things, but this was, you know, 5 years.
But even as the book goes on and the memoir, you talk about it. I mean, you spent, like you said, a good 5 years doing it.
Yeah.
There was something where towards the end, and it's really when John Hughes, when you got the news that John Hughes died, mm-hmm. that it did something not just for the project you were working on, but for your life in the way that you have, you know, spent a considerable amount of your life, whether it be your childhood using escapism to watch movies or your adulthood mm-hmm. to almost use escapism to work this project. But it, in a weird way, you came to this idea that maybe it's a little bit of closure.
My wife likes to call it failing upward. And I thought that was a really interesting way of putting it. I mean, you know, in that time, I was actually slowly starting to get work as a writer. I was starting to learn how that works because it's a process. You've got to get edited. You got to learn to pitch people. So meanwhile, you know, I've got this thing that I'm holding on to, and I don't really realize that I'm actually kind of getting my feet onto solid ground as a writer, which, you know, it's not something you're paying attention to if you're so blind because you're, you know, obsessed with one thing. And I am really lucky that I failed so much and kind of took away a lot from that. I mean, now I see that. I mean, I've got this pink book that kind of proves that.
Right. The memoir comes out of it. And if you could do us a favor, I mean, there's a great passage that kind of sums up the concept of the John Hughes movie, but also how it affects you. It's on the at the end of the book, if you don't mind reading. Jason Diamond is the author of Searching for John Hughes, Everything I Needed to Know About Life and I Learned from Watching 80s Movies. Go ahead.
We read and watch those things because we want to fit the idea of perfection into a little box and insert ourselves into it for a little while. I use those John Hughes movies as my roadmap for life. You should never do that. Life might at times mirror the Kafkaesque, the Dickensian, or even the trappings of Hughes's clean-cut little slice of America. But novels aren't guidebooks. Movies aren't models for life. It took me nearly 30 years to come to that conclusion. I lived through those books, songs, television shows, and movies, the way the characters looked, talked, and acted. I thought that could translate over into reality, that I could make the world into my own. I wanted so badly to run away from my life, but you can't bury yourselves in other people's pages and scenes. You aren't David Copperfield or Tom Sawyer. Those love songs on the radio might speak to you, but they're not about you or the person you pine for. Life is not a John Hughes film. Hmm.
This memoir is almost the product of that, the way that light bulb that went off in your head. As you make the rounds and you talk about it and you are touring on this book, is it more clear than ever that what John Hughes meant to you as a young kid and also as an adult?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's one of those things that you say it, you're like, oh, if I didn't have this, I don't know if I'd be here. And that's a sound, I don't want to sound like I'm being too dramatic, but there are certain things in my life that if I didn't have them, I wouldn't be here. And I wholeheartedly believe John Hughes films, I don't want to say saved me, but it's really the best thing. I mean, I love those films. I still love those films. And it's incredible that I could kind of go through this all these processes. I can go look at John Hughes and his movies from every angle, be it a critical angle, which mm-hmm. I've written critically about him. And
yeah, I mean, there's a lot in the, I mean, you mentioned in the book too, just the way he dressed up the suburbs, or he told a story of the Chicago suburbs, made them very isolated in a way that this was the only way you could live a suburban life. There was a lot of exclusivity in a movie or a guy's career that was a lot about outcasts.
Yeah, it was an interesting, it's a weird juxtaposition. And at the end of the day, though, I mean, I still love those films. I mean, I still wince at the Long Duk Dong parts, and Jake Ryan has some pretty questionable things he says in 16 Candles. But, you know, at the end of the day, yeah, this conversation wouldn't be happening if I didn't have Pretty in Pink or Ferris to fall back on.
Well, we got to have you back at some point just to talk about the Fireside Bowl days.
Yeah,
it's about
for
growing
sure.
up in Chicago. Jason Diamond is the author of Searching for John Hughes or Everything I Thought I Needed to Know About Life I Learned from Watching 80s Movies. He is the sports editor for RollingStone.com. Jason, thanks so much for taking the time out.
Thank you. This is my pleasure.